Good morning, Unity. I have to tell you, it is just great to see real live people out here. And you know, I have to comment on what you've just experienced, because I don't want us to ever take for granted what happens here. I think the dean is platforming this morning. I was a little on the anxious side getting up here. What would my message? Would I be concise? Would people understand? And then there's Dina, who just gives this energy of groundedness with a beautiful prayer that you just can't get everywhere. And then there's James and the live music. What can I say? So I know we have a lot of people who are still out there for one reason or another, haven't come back to the church, to our spiritual center. I want to encourage you to do it. Please do. It's just not the same. Live music and the spiritual, the energy that you could feel with this band this morning, you just can't get it over the wires. And so I want to just encourage you all to think about it and come out for the occasions that Dina has already explained. So this morning I'm going to talk about spiritual understanding, since this is the first Sunday of the month and we're focusing on understanding as the power. And so I'm going to share with you some of my own personal journey as a chaplain and even in my work as a member of the board in terms of how it relates to the practical application of my prayer and meditation. Those are really the reasons I came to Unity. Prayer is unique at Unity, and understanding that and being able to move into it is a gift in and of itself. So I'm struck by the words of the song, "I Will Be the One." It's really each of us needs to proclaim for ourselves that we will be the one, that we will be on that spiritual journey, and we will explore what there is to explore. So in terms of spiritual understanding, I'm really drawn to a particular aspect of it, because you know you can go in a lot of different places with the idea of understanding. I'm going to talk about intuition, okay? That kind of understanding that comes from within. Then in one form or another, it has to do with the thoughts and feelings that arise within us. Charles Fillmore, actually, in his book on the 12 powers, did a wonderful job of describing this and setting sort of a tone, if you will. And I'm going to actually read it, because I just think it's meaningful just the way it is. So Charles said, "When we discover in ourselves a flow of thought that seems to have been evolved independently of the reasoning process, we're often puzzled about its origin and its safety as a guide. In its beginnings, this seemingly strange source of knowledge is often turned aside as kind of a daydream or just a thought that's passing through our minds. Again, it seems like a distant voice, an echo of something that we have heard and maybe forgotten. One should give attention to this unusual and usually faint whispering of the spirit. It is not the intellect, and it doesn't originate in the skull. It is the development in man of a great capacity to know himself and to understand the purpose of creation. It's enough to know that the understanding is opened in both head and heart when man gives himself wholly to the Lord." Charles, you know, was a real advocate of science, especially given the time that he was writing. And so I think he would be okay with where I'm going to go with the rest of my talk, which is I'm going to talk about some of our current science and how it is now feeling very much like spiritual understanding and science are coming together. It's really in the realm, if you will, of quantum physics. The first group I want to talk about of research has to do with HeartMath. This is an institute that's been around now for 25 years, and they have done innumerable studies about the relationship of the heart with the brain. And they have had 300 peer-reviewed independent studies that suggest that there are three categories or types of, if you will, of intuition. So the first one might be the most obvious to us. It's implicit knowledge or implicit learning. It's the things that we absorb, either through school or through experience, that we take into our brains, and somehow that gets parked there on shelves in our brain. So I'm sure you've all had an experience where you can't remember where you left your keys, or you can't remember someone's name, or whatever, and there's a part of you that knows, if I just park that in the back of my brain and go do something else, it'll pop up, and it does, often does. That would really be implicit. It's information that's stored there somewhere. The brain actually works even when you're asleep. Sometimes you can set up something to come to you or to reveal to you in your sleep, and your brain will pull that up. So that's called implicit knowledge or implicit learning. The second one is a really interesting one, I think, because it's an intuition that's called energetic sensitivity. So this is, it really refers to the ability of the nervous system to detect and respond to environmental signals or electromagnetic fields. So if you think about this one, you know, we all had circumstances where, well, we hear about this all the time. We hear that there, someone knew that a hurricane was imminent, or a tornado was just a matter of minutes away, or an earthquake. We also know that humans and animals have some kind of instinct around the changes in the phases of the moon and the impact that it has on us. Animals in particular have a real sensitivity to this electromagnetic field. We have all kinds of studies. You know, the last tsunami they had in Japan, they lost almost no animals because the animals, in some cases a day before, certainly hours before, were going to higher ground and finding safety somewhere because something was happening. Something was going on. I heard on television an interview with a couple who were at the Champlain Towers. This was a boyfriend and girlfriend who had been dating for 3 years. He lived at the towers, she lived somewhere else. They had a regular schedule to how they got together. On the particular night, which I think it was Wednesday night, he had been over to her house, and he was ready to go back to his condo, and she said, I really want you to stay here tonight. And he said, well, you know, I can't. For one thing, I'm in dirty clothes. I got to get up early tomorrow morning, so I really need to go back to my place. She said, no, please, I'm begging you to stay here. And he said, you never do this. We always, you know, I'm always here during the week, and that's not what we do. She said, I just feel like something's going to happen. Okay, and that was the night the tower came down. Hello, can you hear me? Okay. I'm all right with this, yeah. Okay. Thank you. So now I want to move on to the third one, which I find the most fascinating of the intuitive processes. And this is called non-local intuition. Now, for those of you who happen to have been in a course that Cynthia taught recently, I understand from talking with Cynthia that you got a dose on non-local intuition. It refers to the knowledge or sense of something that cannot be explained by past or forgotten knowledge or by sensing environmental signals. It has been suggested that the capacity to receive and process information about non-local events appears to be the property of an all-physical and biological organization, and this likely is because of the inherent interconnectedness of everyone in the universe. Basically, they are now discovering that there is another form of energy. And the difficulty with it at this point is they can't measure it. They can observe it, they can see when it happens, but they don't know how to measure it. And for our purposes, I'm going to use the term that some scientists use, which is called L energy, which stands for light energy. So the large body of information that's available in this, a lot of it came from this group that I referred to as HeartMath. And there's just one study that I'm gonna try to present this very, very simply, but here's how it worked. And again, this has been repeated with over 1,000 subjects, so this is not a simple group of 20 people. They basically hooked people up. They asked people to meditate in a private room. They hooked them up with measurements for their heart and measurements for their brain, EKG and an ECG. And then on a monitor in front of them, they flashed photos. The photos were randomly distributed by a computer. They didn't even want a person sort of deciding which ones to do because they didn't want anything to affect the study. The photos were of two types. One was emotionally charged situations that were horrible. So it would be dead bodies, it would be skeletons, it would be a rattlesnake about to strike, that kind of thing that would startle you in a fear base. The other kind of pictures that they showed were very mellow, wonderful, loving, warm pictures of puppies, bouquet of flowers, a sunset, an ocean. Again, these pictures all came out randomly, and as people observed, what they found, and this is the fascinating part, is that after the showing of several pictures, two or three pictures, all of a sudden, all of these participants with a level of significance started to actually emote and react both with their heart and their mind before the picture showed up on the screen. Okay? So it was very shocking when this first occurred, and in fact, they decided that it was somewhere around 4 to 5 seconds. So they clocked all of this, so they knew that people were beginning to have heart and brain reactions 4 to 5 seconds before the picture showed, and it was in alignment, the kind of reaction they had was in alignment with the nature of the picture, whether it was scary or it was warm and loving. All right? Now, here's the thing I think that's even more interesting. I mean, I think that's pretty good. That means precognitive. People have a sense that something's going to occur even before it does, and even can kind of qualify it a little bit. But here's the other part of it. Which do you think responded first, the heart or the brain? The heart. You know, we live in kind of a brain culture that everything's about studying the brain and all the aspects of the brain, but they found in all of these cases that the brain was able to respond more than, let me just see what the actual number was. It was somewhere around a half a second before the brain did. So it wasn't the old story we hear that a brain sees something and it tells it the heart be scared. It's the other way around. The heart, in fact, is notifying the brain that they need to do something. All right? So this has been verified that 1.5 seconds is the length of time that the heart was ahead of the brain in determining these. So you know this old saying, go with the force, Luke? Let the force be with you? Sound familiar to anyone? Yeah. So anyone who grew up in Star Wars culture has to know that. Well, I have to tell you just a quick little thing. My grandson and I were playing one of those games on a video game. And I wasn't doing very well. It was Mario Kart, and I frankly couldn't keep the darn car on the track. And I was getting incredibly angry and tense about it, at which point my, I think then, 8-year-old grandson reaches over, puts his hand on top of mine, on the controller, and he says, Grandpa, Grandpa, be with the force. So I'm grateful that Skywalker is around to start educating my grandson around the importance and the power of the force. One last thing I just want to touch upon is the writings of another person. His name is Paul. And Paul is was a writer, he's deceased now, who had a serious illness, and as a result of it, he is also a psychoneurologist. So he was studying the effects of issues on the brain. And what he worked particularly with were people who had had heart transplants. So as a psychologist, he worked with them. And over the years, he gathered a huge amount of data about these experiences of heart recipients, that they in fact took on incredible personality changes that could only be, and they didn't even know who the donor was, but eventually when they were connected back to you, they found that these changes had to do with characteristics of the donor of the heart. So they went through, spouses would say, wow, he used to be a type A, now he's the mellowest dude in the world. Or the reverse, I don't know what's going on with him, but he's agitated all the time. Or all of a sudden he has these interests in these strange foods that we've never eaten before. Or other examples of, I love to dance. Someone who had never been to a dance hall or to a bar to do that is suddenly engaged in doing dancing. They attribute these things to somehow the heart having a capacity to interpret the energy and to impair, to put out their knowledge to the new person, the new recipient. And they think that in those cases where the transplants don't go so well, it's because the people who have received the transplants are really struggling to adjust to the changes that they've had no control over. So Paul talked a lot about a particular work that's being done at Princeton. I'm not going to go into that now because I want to move on and also for you to have a chance to hear from Carmela. But they did talk about how you can really impact your ability to receive this L energy and interpret it. And they're actually, for anyone who's a meditator or a prayer from Unity, this should sound a little familiar. Here are the things they suggest. First of all, be patient. Be still, tolerant, enduring, and open enough to be available to become sensitive. So often when we're praying, we don't know what's going to come in that prayer. It's about being patient and letting it unfold. Be connected. That's the second one. Try to unite more than control. Oh, we could all have a lesson from that one, that it's really a value for us to think about ways in which we can let go. Let go, let God, and to really think much more about how to be connected. The third one is be pleasant. Go along, like a heart transplant recipient must do to learn to get along with the new heart. In the PEAR program, those persons who talk nicely to the machines, so the PEAR program did things like you having people work at controlling machines, changing the numbers of random distribution, and they had actually a little frog machine called Galvani that they were actually able to train folks to be able to get the frog to go from one place to another using their mind, using their heart. All right? There's so many studies here, you could spend days on it. But the important thing here is to be able to relax enough to let the energy come in. All right? Be humble. Realize that your idea of self is your brain's illusion of separateness. We're all connected and mutually dependent. And lastly, be gentle. Take it easy, take your time, and take what comes. Let the operators of the PEAR experiment say, like they do say, try less to control and more to let the force of natural connection happen. So in conclusion, I just want to wrap up by saying, since energy, including light energy, carries information, and you are constantly sending out energy, you are forever in an act of info-energetic intercourse that recreates who and how you are. We're constantly engaged in a reverberating info-energetic dance. Our energy is collected by another energy system. Our energy alters the pattern and resonation of energy for that other system. That system sends out to someone else newly modified form of energy, and that is how it all happens, on and on and on with every beat of your heart. So now it's time for Carmela to talk with you about her spiritual journey and some things that she's been learning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Oh my God, I'm so excited to see all of you. Thank you, Bob. Thank you for reminding us how important the heart is. And as he said, I'm going to be talking to you about my own journey and understanding of the heart that I've been going through recently. And I can't wait to hear your thoughts about what I'm about to say. So, recently, Reverend Lawrence and I went to Unity Village. I don't know if you know, but that's the headquarters of the Unity Movement. And we volunteered there. It was a week of service. We worked really hard. And as part of that, it's called Nehemiah Week. I don't know if I mentioned that. You should look it up, definitely, and volunteer for it. As part of that, they gave us room and board, which meant food. Now, most of you don't know this, but I have a lot of food sensitivities. And through the years, I've reduced what I eat, and I could only eat like 5 things. So I was a little concerned. I was like, okay. They started feeding us barbecue because it's in Kansas City, and I don't know if you know that, they fight about their barbecue. And all kinds of rich fried fish and all kinds of desserts, and I had an egg sandwich every morning. It was lovely, but I was a little concerned. So I was bracing for the worst, and something interesting happened. Nothing. I was completely fine. Here I was eating all the foods I usually don't, and I was fine. So my heart and my intuition, a question came that I had never thought about before. I said, I wonder, is there a link between my service, the service I'm doing here at Unity Village, and healing? Because I've been trying to heal this for a long time, affirming, praying, all kinds of things. So, as usual, I went to my favorite person, Myrtle. I don't know if you know, I love Charles, but Myrtle is my favorite. And lo and behold, I didn't expect to find anything when I did service and healing. But I don't know if you know, Reverend Kelly Isola wrote this amazing article. It's on unity.org. I'm not sure if I'm saying her name right, but the article was called Service Was Always Part of the Journey. And in this article, she talks about Myrtle's healing journey. And as some of you know, Myrtle was very sick and she was never going to heal from this. And through her consciousness and through her understanding, she did heal. And that's how we started with the Unity Movement. But what Kelly Isola, the Reverend, says is, however, what I believe has gotten lost in Myrtle's clarity that any healing experience must include being in service to others, offering your gifts, helping others see their own divinity, and giving of your resources. So when I heard this and I read this, I was like, okay. So here is Myrtle telling me that indeed service goes along with her healing journey. It wasn't just about her. And in fact, she, if you look at what happened in her life, she healed, and she didn't just stay home and say, well, great, I'm healed. See you. She decided to share this with others. She started giving Charles as well, Silent Unity, printing the materials, teaching others about this. So service was integral to her life and to her journey. In fact, I don't know if you know this, but Myrtle would mostly, we know Myrtle's work mostly through letters that she wrote. And this woman had written to her and said, okay, Myrtle, I need a blessing. Give me the words for a blessing. And what she said, I found, and Kelly Isola, Reverend, also talks about this. She has a whole talk on this. She said, divine love through me blesses and multiplies you. Divine love through me blesses and multiplies you. She didn't say multiplies me or multiplies yourself. It multiplies the other. So how I took that to mean is that any love and healing that I experience multiplies the other and people around you. So I said, okay, so there is something there. So I started thinking, okay, how do I use my own Unity training to follow Myrtle's example? I started thinking, well, what if everything I do through my own healing journey actually impacts everyone else? And I know this seems obvious, but it really struck me at a deeper level, a heart level, as Bob was saying. So I started thinking, what if everything we do matters? And then I thought, well, how often do we fall asleep? We fall asleep to how we come across. I know I do. We fall asleep to our impact. Think about it, I'm on Zoom meetings all day. I say, well, it doesn't really matter how I show up if I have my pajamas on the bottom. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how I talk to my daughter. She'll forgive me, you know? So I think we fall asleep and we think that it doesn't matter what we do and how we live our lives, because who cares? But what if everything we do does matter? So I started thinking of a few ways of practicing this in my own life. So I'd love to hear some of your thoughts. There are many others, but here are the three that I want to share with you this morning. So first is words of truth. As you know, Myrtle healed through speaking words of affirmation to her body. She said, "I went to all the life centers in my body and spoke words of truth to them, words of strength and words of power." Now she's speaking to millions of cells, right? So what's the difference if she speaks to billions of cells or speaking to billions of people? It's the same. We have the same impact. So what if we started speaking words of strength and power to everyone around us? Our mate, our kids, people we work with, how would that change things? Instead of always looking for, I don't like that person, right? The second example I want to give you is finding the divine within ourselves. That's a big unity principle, right? It's God is not without, but within, right? In fact, Myrtle said, "To do the great works that Jesus promised his followers would do, one must raise his consciousness to the place where he is able to see the perfect image and likeness of God in all people." Right? That's like the namaste concept. The divine in me sees the divine in you. So what if we would see the divine in others regularly, in our mate when we're talking to them? See that divine. See it in our coworkers. See it in our church members. How would that shift the energy in your life, in your interactions? And the third example I want to leave you with is prayer. I'm a prayer chaplain. It's one of my favorite things to do. It's why I'm probably at Unity. I love the way we pray. And I started experimenting with prayer as well. I started saying, what if I not only pray my usual prayer, but what if I pray before a meeting? How will that shift that energy in the room? If I pray before I'm going to have a conversation, how will that shift the conversation? So now I find myself constantly praying, just little prayers. And I've been seeing small shifts in people around me, right? So those are the three practices I'd like to suggest, and I'd love to hear yours. I want to leave you with one more Myrtle thought, though. Often we think we can't make an impact unless we're doing something big in the world, right? I'm the minister, or I'm Martin Luther King, or whatever. The truth is, as I've given those examples, we constantly are impacting others. But Myrtle was clear. We don't have to do only what we want or what we like or what we think we're passionate or what our purpose is. She says, in Healing Letters, she says, "It's not always best for a person to continue doing which he likes to do or that for which he has been trained. We need to round out to develop all our faculties and powers to do that which brings us close to humanity and that which increases what the world needs most." So it doesn't matter what you're doing. If you hate your job, you're not so fond about your mate, doesn't matter. You have a purpose, and that is the purpose to be that divine spirit in that situation. So I love Myrtle. She's very loving, but she's also tough. So get over it. Be that divine presence. So imagine if we practiced this all the time, if we knew that what we did mattered. What ripple effect could you have in your community, in your world, in your family? What if everything we do matters?
Thank you so much, Bob and Carmela. What peace and ease Bev and Lawrence must have knowing that they are in good hands, leaving you both here. Thank you for sharing your talents with us. And now is our time to give back, as you guys so lovingly do. We thank you for all the many ways you donate to us and keep us running. Whether you have a reoccurring payment, or you send a check in the mail, or you click that donate button, we thank you for that. And now is the perfect time. If you have a gift to give, hold it in your hand or just hold the energy of that gift in your hand as we say together our blessing. With a grateful heart, we acknowledge God as source of all that is. Today, we let go of any concern of lack and allow good to unfold in our lives. Good is ours. Good and more good is ours. Everywhere we go, we see this good. We feel it. We experience it. We freely give it, and it multiplies itself around us. And so it is. Amen.